Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... Hi, Casey of Anytime Fitness. This is a podcast while driving. I'll give you a bit of an idea around it, and we're going to talk about the idea of the expansion of a potentially good thing, which is brain training while exercising, and put a few caveats on it. Now, firstly off, for you at least, and the audience, I'll sort of explain what's going on. Part of cognitive rehab is get your brain thinking and talking, not while you're just, while you're doing anything, any activity you do, two or three activities, and strain things up and look at it, really mix it up, push it in, going through, and every once in a while, my son has a late night on the computer gaming consoles or whatever it is, sleeps in, and I get to drive up to Katoomba, from Glenbrook up to Katoomba, and this is on the drive back. I don't speak with him in the car. In fact, we're a bit silent as I'm actually preparing my thoughts and my head for my podcast. So this particular podcast is about brain training while doing exercise. So just let's look at, I suppose, the first couple of things, brain training in general. So people do brain training for various reasons. One is for the idea that they're going to increase their brain ability. Now, in general, most people don't really need to do that. They find a life and get into a situation which is sort of calibrated to their brain's ability. So that's a sort of natural way of doing it. If they are too smart, which unfortunately I think I am, too smart for their environment, they're unhappy. And if they're too dumb for their environment, they're unhappy. So seeking happiness tends to get you into this general area. Now, there is obviously a difference here when you had a high capacity brain before, and you had you have a stroke or strokes like myself, and people grab you by the shoulders and say, "Do cognitive rehab. It's one of these things you have to do." So it's a sort of slightly different class of things going on. Just watching as I'm driving here. Hopefully you won't hear me crash and burn. So look, brain training for general improvement of cognitive ability is sort of like learning to be a surgeon by watching soap operas, or learning driving skills by watching Grand Prix on TV. It's a very sort of passive type of stuff, and it really, when you look at it ideally, it, although nominally it has some overlap, it mostly is hand-eye coordination and a bit of memory stuff and stuff like that. So it's sort of like learning to go on a road trip by just turning up to the local council driving school day after day and hoping to get to Perth. It's sort of, there's lots of things that you'd say, oh wow, perhaps let's wait for a good scientific study of it before I believe this one. So it's sort of a little bit of credence with it. It's sort of got hopping in the car, watching, you know, and you're driving school. Or it's got a little bit of, sort of like learning to be a comedian by watching Seinfeld. It does some things. It gets you laughing, gets you thinking in a particular way, but it actually doesn't actually get you across everything you need to do. So with that in mind, one has to be very skeptical of the various stuff that you're looking at. And one of the things is the feedback is designed, is sort of self-designed feedback. If you had a feedback mechanism which was brutal and realistic, people would give up. One sort of understands that, and when you actually honestly look at your improvements, you say, well, that's basically improved me in the basic skill of tapping butterflies. And then when you actually get it, so what actually happened to me is I've done hours and hours of tapping butterflies or listening to things and stuff like that, and when it comes to me to actually go and find something, only a little bit of an improvement. When I've had to actually go out and kill stick bugs, it's still you're still brutally aware that you're a bit slow in picking them up. You know, I had a recent stink bug infestation. It's still, you know, still basic intelligence is there, but it's not a godsend. However, we are in this rather strange thing in that professionals, ethically, because each individual is very different, have to be very conservative in saying what we say. Now, I'm just going to stop here and break again. Here we're going. That's 5 minutes. My God. Okay, back again. And to put things in the picture, Case is the gym manager. I'm a gym person going to the gym, and I've been on the walker for 1 hour, so 3/4 of an hour strength training, then another hour gym, sort of walker, not the walker, the treadmill. The treadmill has a facility to do some brain training, and it's got a very slow touch screen computer on it's a very low end touch screen computer, and I've been working on that, and I've shown Tracy my results. Oh, hey, look at this! It's showing nearly just not quite doubling, something like of the order of over, say, 60% improvement in all fields. Now, everyone has to see that it's taken me a while to work out how to do the games, and, you know, it's sort of it would be a natural profile of someone of relatively high intelligence can unstick, you know, what's holding them back. Now, I think this is a real critical thing, is that you can't look, it's cause and effect. It may be a cause and a removal of an antagonistic effect. So rather than any major change, you can limit, prune an antagonistic effect going in. I know that's a bit rough, but I've said, you know, ethically, I've said, oh, look, we should really look at this, that there is a possibility, there is a remote possibility that this means something. And it's a bit like, I don't know if you know the disease Ebola, everyone dying and you get one patient living, you say, well, perhaps we should look into this. Now, we're going back into the fact that brain training logically is stupid, and we've got sort of these three classes of things. I thought it's while I was just out on the brief break, I want to stop a bit later. You've got the people who go on fads, people who don't require any evidence, and just causality, any convenient causality they want to, like they have any story they like, and they just say, oh yeah, I'll do it, and they do it, and I suppose these people do things for short times, because if they can do something on a fad, they're sort of like the fast food, it's intellectual fast food, they need more of it, they never stick at things, and they do things, and they are what I would class as self-declared experts. Now, an expert can actually pick up the general idea of what to do, or a general overview from very little information. And that's what they can do, except what they tend to do is come to wrong conclusions. Then you do have what we call is... So these are the fad people, general public. Then you have the experts. Now, the experts, one thing is that they have to be... The expert in as much as that they successfully don't be fad people. They can successfully ensure that they have a basket of things that they can think of which have a high reliability, that you can rely on what they say, and that they're reliable, that what they say will be true for the largest number of people, largest number of situations, and what they say won't be completely faddish. I don't know what you could say. So they have a basket of things, and they tend to exclude a lot of things. So if it may be true for some people, but not for others, so they'll be very cautious and say, I'm going into Wentworth Falls, and my God, it's actually covered in mist. So we'll have a little bit of a break here while I finish this one up. So you've got your experts, and your experts tend to be demonstrably true. What they say is demonstrably true. So they tend to control all variables and just change one at a time. So the classic scientific method. And therefore, what they say is demonstrably true. That's partly because we pay for their expertise, and then we can also sue for their expertise. So if they say something wrong, and it's quite a vicious little thing going on here. Oh, shoot, it's like a long time to go on this one here. If they say something wrong, they can get sued. So you've got all this thing leading to some very conservative things. And if you can say it's Westmost building, I've just got to remember what my son said here. So you've got all these things... things happening. So you've got your punter, you've got your expert, and you've got your I don't know what how you describe it. You've got your expert, and you've also got your top of the range intellectual entrepreneur, dynamic, get out there and get everything and actually engage with life, engage with all the variables happening at once and see how you go. Now, in general, if you just randomly grab any idea and just run with it as hard as you can, what you do is you just get exhausted. And just having a look around here, it'll be a while here while I'm waiting here. I'm in the Wentworth Falls TAFE car park, going to pick up a certificate at 9 o'clock, so I should be able to finish this podcast quite well as I stop here coming on. You've got this thing about this is the classic thing. You've got the person comes in and that they they're stupid. They think brain training, brain, do good. I can see the most simple model, and that works. And that would, in fact, be unethical, because it's safe to do, because you are taking money from someone to do that in various forms, brain training, gym and stuff like that. And you are selling them something which you do not know is true. So you know, it's unethical to do it. And the idea of saying it's their decision really is not ethically right, because if it's actually not right to take money off a stupid person, in that if the moment you go past your logical thing and they're stupid, they're incapable of selecting the correct thing, the responsibility to be correct falls back onto you. Now, if you're unscrupulous, you say, oh, well, no, it's the real world, I've got a lower standard here, and that type of stuff. Then you've got your academics, which are in this thing. Then you have your, that's two, three is that you've got multivariate engineers. Who can actually go in there and go into the real world, solve a crime, build a bridge, and you've got all things, the price of steel, the shipping of steel. So when you're actually doing something, you've got all these variables which you have to add up and you have to actually knock over from time to time. And in this case, you've got this variable thing. You've got the variable of the nature of the damage. You've got the variable of your ability to do it. You've got the variable of the actual brain training. You've got variables of your body mass, endurance, the actual individual variables, and you actually have, you do have something that it's called multivariable analysis. And so if you watch all the variables and keep on top of them for a while, rather than actually just having say two variables and a curve, you can have three or four variables, and that leads to a surface. So if I have an XYZ, look, there is mathematics behind it. If I have multiple variables, the more variables I get, the actual constrained variables, say if there's any type of correlation. So look, if two things are not correlated and you plot them, you know, take data points, plot them, they'll form a fuzz. Okay, you can chuck that away. If they are correlated or limited, they will tend to form a surface. And so this is something that obviously group one can't look at because they can't understand it. Group two can't look at it because they can't make a statement about it because it's too complex and they are just constrained to make correct statements so they don't get sued. The third group of people can actually have to get out there and do it. And so you've got this surface. So let's look at, you've got mass, endurance, heart speed endurance, strength, cognitive performance, all these other performances. And you've also got, say, like computer performance. So what happens is that, you might be tired, the computer might be going slowly, and so you've got this manifold of things, and so you will say, well, I will explore this section and try and move it. So as you can direct a little bit where you're going. So obviously as your mass declines, you can't sort of jump up to higher mass, so you know that your mass is declining, your weight is declining, and so you're looking at a different area of a curve and multivariate analysis. And so this now this is really important because this multivariate analysis is what the gym and cognitive thing actually really delivers you. Now, this is something that you obviously can't sell out there, but it delivers you this thing where you get several things to look at, several targets to look at, rather than just focus, you know, let's say we're going to focus on this for this week. You focus on all of them and sort of let the cross correlations go across. So let's look at a few. So your group one type of person will say, I do brain training and it improves my brain. Simple. And they're very aggressive people, those group one people. As you say, they're within the comfort zone. So if you say anything that perhaps challenges that, they get very aggressive and they'll shut you down. Group two people, you have to at least tell them, there's a diplomacy with group two people. These are the academics. You say, I acknowledge that you're in a zone, and from your zone, you know, there's group one people, but I'm in another zone, and if they're smart enough academics, they'll know what you're doing, and they can't help you. And so there's a really important thing, particularly in the medical profession. There's the it's all legally. There's this, humans are very manipulative things. It's sort of like you're getting patients is like this highly vicious tiger. You've got to anaesthetize them, and you've got it's sort of like a zoo. It's sort of like the medical people are like the zookeepers of the thing, and what they can't do is that they can't actually create diseases, and they've got to replace things to the wild, and people have to actually, live so the medical people aren't there. Otherwise, the idea of medicine is not to have a society built around medicine. Medicine is a service thing. So there's all these complexities going on. But the actual your punter won't understand this, which is a problem. Your medical people quite know how to interface with it. But in reality, what will keep you going, sustain you, is the fact you've got multiple variable analysis. So it just so happens that they're synergistic things. So the fact that I'm on a walker keeps me focused for an hour doing brain training. And the fact that I'm doing brain training keeps me on the walker for an hour. So these are two marginally independently positive things going together. Now, if you look at it, if I just purely did the walker, that would be, not the walker, the treadmill, that would actually be a lower, I mean, this is not very sexy, but it would actually be a lower grade thing to do. It's just marginally pushing up the level. So, in effect, going on a walker cognitively is pretty much equivalent to sitting in a lounge chair. So it's just a little bit up. Now, there is obviously some brain things going on. One is obviously probably the most cognitive thing is actually thinking about the best cognitive exercise. It's actually coming out, working out how to actually upgrade this to get it work. The actual true cognitive rehabilitation is working out what to do. So I suppose this is a bit part of it. Now, you've got these other things that you are thinking, and you're thinking, and you're doing brain training, but you're actually putting a little bit extra in terms of got a sort of a high blood rate. You've got good oxygenation, hopefully. You've got exercise. Now, the interesting thing about the, let's call them walker, but the treadmill, is that they're shock resistance. Now, if you've got some crappy shoes like me, it just means that in terms of risk, the risk of doing it is lowered. So that's those are very marginal, non-sexy things. And remembering that it's doing cognitive training is pretty equivalent to saving the planet by watching nature documentaries. It's of that level of things. However, we don't have the ability to provide cognitive rehab. The reality is that in this consumable world where we discard so much shit, so we might have a perfectly good TV, it doesn't tune quite right, it's got a bit of a, we ditch it. So we've got this consumable throwaway thing, and this happens with people as well. They're a little bit slow, abandon them, and that goes across, which is perfectly okay, except if you're actually not a product, you're actually alive as a human, you're going to say, well, you sort of dust yourself off and out of the wheelie bin at the back where you hear this and you start to sort of number five is alive type of thing to get going. Now there's other strange things. You sort of read, there's enough suggestions in the literature to say, look, there might be these odd correlations going on. So let's Look, the actual brain training is produced a very large improvement, and there's improvement in other things. And this is, you can't take it back. I'm relearning electronics, I'm doing podcasting, I'm doing a whole heap of things, all focusing, it's all of this is leading to a positive attitude to get across, and part of the positive attitude is the gym. So you can't really break this all apart. So the gym is part of a larger collection of positive things to do, and actually reading through literature, you see, you occasionally pick up things. Doing strength training in rats affects the fattiness of their liver, which I do know this has a real cognitive aspect to it. So your liver it's really strange, goes across here. And there's, besides the actual things, we're dealing with a whole series of things we don't understand about the brain. So if we don't understand it, there's sort of two strategies. One is that we can do nothing and think, or you can go out and have a go and just, you know, it's sort of like see things. So people say, look, there's a pot of gold out there in the night, in the bush and stuff like that. And you can do two things. One is that you can sort of sit around the campfire and have your cup of coca, and there's the campfire is going to burn out. And what did you do for your holiday? Well, I was sensible. I didn't look for the pot of gold. I sat by the campfire and drank my cup of coca, which is okay. It's horses for courses. Or we could say, bugger it. Let's stumble around in the dark, stub your toe into a few things, have a look. And that's really what I'm going here. So I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a path. I had no guidance to get me there. I just had the, bugger, this, looking at this, is that's not going to lead anywhere, is it? Whereas the majority of people go sit in the car park saying, look, it's not leading anywhere. No thought after that to get across. So yeah, so you got these unusual things. One is the quantity of training, brain training, is probably 10 times higher than what they're counting on. That's probably one thing. You've got these other things of exercise and brain training to go across. You've got these other things that the specific type of brain damage is that you've got a very high, apparently from the testing, a very high brain power, which I didn't know before, or no one really cared. Yeah, I can tell you that you wouldn't pick it if you had to actually. If you were in the front desk at the complaints desk, say you're at a restaurant and you're at the complaints desk, and you're taking all the complaints I get in, and then you go, I'm going to go to this restaurant myself, and it's actually not a bad nosh. It's not a bad nosh. But so in terms of me personally picking up the amount of intelligence there, they've had to actually do tests, and it's been a bit of a revelation to me that there's this base intelligence they're looking at and saying, oh look, there is something there. But fortunately I haven't had the I'm so good, I'm on the cover of a magazine and everyone knows about me. I've sort of just really been I suppose the derelict in who's been chucked out in a wheelie bin, abandoned, dusting yourself off, and crikey, mate, geez, that's pretty amazing. So you've got all these factors coming together, and we've got to get going as to think, you poor little bastard, you listened to me for half an hour. We've got to get a plan ahead. Now, one of the things I have learned recently is the fundamental, we don't do anything bright in Australia thing. I don't mean this as, there's a whole lot of people who are going, we don't do anything bright in Australia because I'm so bright. No, we just don't do anything bright in Australia. End of story. And so there's been a series of things that I've been involved in where I've tried to be bright. Well, I haven't tried to be bright. I've just tried to be absolutely, I suppose, ethically, normally. And that people have come in and said, now, let's dumb this down a little bit. And it's really pretty much everything that I've looked at. So the problem is that you've got to come up with a bright idea, or you've got to come up with a workable long-term idea. Then you have to guide it down into the real world such that it's on the cusp of not happening, but still there. So if it's not happening, dumb people won't attack it. But if it's still there, it can still happen. So I'm just trying to guide these things down into this area. So just for an example, there's the RSL, and I'm trying to guide them into the future. This is the Return Soldiers thing, sort of doing advanced stuff. And as I guide, they just look at what I'm doing, and they say, let's not do it. And so I'm just trying to actually find the area here. So there's certain things like I'd be like interested in engaging the Chinese and Islamic community with the RSL. I'm interested in the RSL doing Skype to return veterans, a whole series of things, getting projects up and running. In the History Society, there's various things that I can see to do. But it's a guide between not doing it and enough. It's trying to get that balance, that zone area to go forward. And here we've got the same thing. So one of the important things is that you never present a stupid, not a stupid people. Can I say that I've really the... people who somehow have got money and taken risks, and they take risks and I don't know, it's the people with money and control aren't necessarily the brightest people. They have fake brightness by having a group of people who themselves call themselves bright, who know other people who are bright. And eventually, they know brightness by actually knowing the signpost. They know the signpost. Brightness is sort of like a holiday destination. They help on the go to come back and tell you, well, I've got bright friends and stuff like that. So you sort of know in that situation that if you suggest a really intelligent plan, it's not going to get there. And so they'll be sort of... and the worst thing is that if you go, if they tell you what's wrong, you go away and work on it, they could, you've turned up again? No, look, we really were. Code is option B. We want you to go away. So let's look at what realistically can be done. Now, the bottom line is that the moment that you make a stupid claim, i.e., that doing brain training increases your ability because of a particular reason, that's a hypothesis, gets disproved, go to the bottom of the pile, go to the reject pile of cards. So you really can't do that. What we have to do is, there's certain things that we want to tick off. We want to actually grow, we want to find out whether this works. We want to do it ethically, and we want to see if at all possible we can get some government money for it. And in order to do that, there's a series of steps of things that we don't do. So one of the main things is we don't make huge claims about it first. We do create a thing that we're doing is to create a path for credibility, to look at the path of credibility. This is not to establish the credibility of it, but to actually zone out what aspect of this is the most credible. And in order to do that, we can sort of look at resources we have. Now, one of the things, resources we don't have is any money. So ideally, the money that has to be spent is for to do a realistic study is to have noise cancelling microphones and perhaps better computers at the top. That costs, let's say, that costs about for a good computer, possibly a good computer and headphones, you're looking about possibly $1,500, $2,500 for that combination of stuff. And realistically, that's not going to happen. So but essentially that's the essential thing. If you want to do a scientific study, you've got to remove pointless variables. So one pointless variable is the noise of a gym. You know, there's all this music at the background and your computer, which is going achingly slow. So you hit it and it goes, but you missed it, and obviously hit it. Wait a second, and it's brain reading the computer. So you want to get that done. So you really can't make it. You're not ready until you're there. However, one of the things to do is that anytime fitness is not a psychology. Brain-rated organization. It's a gym organization and stuff like that. So it's got to recognize that it can do that, and it's got to provide a service, perhaps to provide training facilities for an international study, and in for which it charges governments and organizations, but supports them in kind. So you can imagine. So let's put this out. You can buy this and get a tax return on it. Furthermore, you can get so you can get your tax back. And furthermore, in Australian government stuff, you can get your tax plus an R&D additional, so you can double your tax return. So you can actually buy this for 20% of the cost. At the end of the day, you can buy a considerable amount of equipment. It requires a bit of auditing, but bear in mind that the average punter is looking at coming in. I want to do brain training and get a result. Okay, now we're several steps away. You're saying group two is the people saying we've got to really look at results. Group three people, you know, throw out results. Group three is people of saying, well, let's explore results. Your business, your strategic business growing power. And what I'm saying to you is that there is a system where you hold off and say, well, we're not going straight there. We're going to actually build things up. We're going to build an R&D profile, which gives us R&D money. And then this is, besides that, in terms of then you can get grants on top of it. And so you get the next net income. Now, with the net income, you then get the ability to network with people to go forward. Oh, jeez, I've got a huge amount of time to go here. And then when you network with people, you then suddenly have your global organization of Anytime Fitness. And you have the ability to run a pilot study. This is not yet with universities, but you're just providing a testbed facility to say that, look, universities, if you want to test people's fitness and cognitive stuff in a coherent way, we've done the groundwork to give you a base study, a base product. Now you can tell us how to modify that, and so we understand the business of that. You can tell us to modify it, and then we'll be able to meet you at a point in time. You give us a date, we can meet you with international things. We can give you international. We can support international communication through our network. Members, so we've got certain things. We've got the gym facilities, we've got international networks and stuff like that. And of course, obviously, this very quietly means, well, all the other gyms are asleep all of a sudden, so there's no point in announcing this now because all the other gyms will just cancel up your information. So you just do this as a sleeper and it goes across now. So this is to get to the step before, so you don't expend any money, as far as I can see, and you can get to the step, and then your next step is getting universities in. So the important thing is that it's if universities and organisations haven't worked with you before, they're not going to do it like that, because you can't just kind of phone them up and go, I'm so great, you're great, the ego doesn't wash with academics. They actually need a considered plan. The fact that, and the other important thing is to have your own internal ethics checking, so that outsourced ethics, but so universities have their, this is one of the things people don't understand, universities have their ethics committees which go through, and then if the industry doesn't have an ethics committee, that's just a huge grey area of question marks, and it really slows things down. But if you do have your own ethics organiser, and this is one of the things you don't quite understand, so you want to be a gym, you're now suddenly looking at how to structure it such that you can get equipment to get there. So if you imagine you just want the great results, there's several steps forward. So you need the understanding of your R&D strategy. You also need to understand your ethics strategy. You know, people say, oh, I've never heard of ethics. It's like, well, I'll do ethics. No, the whole thing is not doing ethics. It's actually having the structure of ethics to go. Because ethics is an organisational thing. There's no doubt that a personal person can be ethical. And if you've got three separate people and they all want to be ethics, they can come up with three totally contradictory ideas, which at the end of the day is flawed and produces a horrible result. So you've got to at every stage, be able to have, we're going this far and no further, and within that range of going no further is ethics. So you say, I'm thinking of an international, this is a second level thing, obviously it's going to be a first level, a limited thing where we're not really trying to get results, we're just going to see whether, how long we can get people working, what we can do. We can just, it's a scoping pilot study. I'm going to look at the ethics, and by not offering financial incentive to people, not taking additional money out of people, and not making promises, we can actually pull what we're doing down into something which is ethically okay. So if I can say, there's several killer things to go for. Killer thing is to make stupid claims, and the second killer thing is to actually create an ethical nightmare which people have to undo first before they can go forward. And you've got to plan that ahead. So that's an interesting thing. Oh, it's still buckets of time to go. So you've got that ethical aspect to really work forward. So you've got the idea of this international study, because you're around the world, and it gives a way that when people read a paper, read a newspaper article, you've automatically got some of the things of Anytime Fitness. It's anytime, it's international, and it's a credible player. This is all things. Now, to go back, you need a pilot of the pilot, and that's where I think we're perhaps ready to look at. And that is where I recruit a couple of my friends, one or two friends, to have a look, to actually see if we, a sort of pilot of a pilot of a pilot, to see whether we can take that first step, and do we need a few other people in and just have it running with no particular endpoint, but to actually scope for how long these sorts of things could run, who could be do the actual process of it, is there got to be any information, any legal stuff to start to get to have it up and running, so it's not a notional thing. And that's a really, really basic thing. So it's at the basic gym. I think the first step is your sort of pilot of a pilot study, where you start to get ready to probably take on one or two people and actually do a bit of a case study of it. You can publish it and all that type of stuff on your long track forward. Then we go to the that's the pre-step. Now the pre-pre-step, the prequel to the pre-step, is what we're immediately thinking: social media release. Social media release is that we've done this, and there's this upcoming but remind. There's so and so has done this effort and used this aspect of the gym, found that Anytime Fitness has had this resources that we perhaps didn't know were there. We sort of felt they were there, but we sort of, and this creative person's been able to work it, and they've got this initial result, which is encouraging. And we've sat down and talked with everyone. You don't have to get everyone, and we've come up with this basic plan. But do it. Your competitors are up their bum, so they're not going to watch it whatsoever. I come up with this basic. The basic plan is, so this thing is all these ethical things, because you don't want to make particularly stroke people. It's multifaceted things, and it could be all these potentials to unpack it. It's a positive result. So the thing is that it's scientists don't chuck out positive results. If my detector goes off scale and I say I wasn't expecting it, I'm not going to investigate it. That's not what scientists do. It's what people before industrial accidents do. They have all these signs that they ignore. Scientists don't do it. But they don't go off immediately and publish it. They go through this, they back up and actually pull resources in to go forward to pursue it. So that's what we're doing. And pulling the resources in is getting the international infrastructure for which scientists can go into. And to get that international infrastructure, we're going to do a pilot of a pilot. I think you could actually do that in a media release. I think that's a fair and reasonable thing to do. Okay, Casey, I hope that's okay. That's a full 48 minutes. And maybe you'll understand it, maybe not. But at least I've tried to pull all the ideas together. So thanks a lot for listening. And of course, this will go to an international audience. And there is no worries. Can I tell you, there is no worries. No one's going to pick this up, because that's the way of the world. You've got to be very, very lucky for people to be interested to take this. But however, there will be listeners overseas who will be keen followers. I think there's a few people overseas who are following my cognitive rehab, my 1,770. I don't think anyone's listened. I've said them all. I'm the only person who's listened to them all. I doubt there's anyone who's listened to me do all the podcasts. Thanks a lot for listening, and I hope this will help, Casey. Bye for now, and good luck for you and the team at Anytime Fitness. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.